The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the controversy surrounding harmful images generated by Grok AI continues. Gardaí are reported to be investigating 200 reports of Grok-generated images. In order to tackle the rise in AI explicit images, researchers in University College Cork have developed a toolkit to reduce engagement. How will that toolkit work? Well, I'm joined now by one of those involved, Dr. Gillian Murphy, UCC School of Applied Psychology and Research Project Principal Investigator. Gillian, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, what exactly is the toolkit?
Yeah, so I suppose I was just discussing this with a neighbour this morning that when we think of the problem of AI generated imagery, you can kind of think of a problem like smoking, where yes, you have to regulate and go after those responsible in terms of the industry, but we can also work to educate the public to dissuade them from engaging in these harmful behaviours. And so this toolkit was developed by my PhD student, John Toomey, with my colleague Conor Linehan, and it essentially uses psychological principles to encourage people to engage in empathy and perspective taking for victims of deepfake and AI abuse, and to dissuade them from ever engaging in this behaviour in the first place.
So what are the elements of the toolkit and how is it accessed?
Yeah, so this research, we've been working on it for a number of years, and we identified that in kind of public discourse and public conceptions of deepfakes and AI imagery, there are these myths that persist. And these are myths like, because it's not real, it's not harmful, or public figures deserve to be targeted, those kind of ideas. And we found that those myths were highly predictive of engaging in these behaviours, engaging in the watching, sharing or creating of deepfakes. And so we know in psychology that attitudes often predict behavior. And likewise, if you can kind of change people's attitudes, that is a great step towards changing their behavior. So in this toolkit, you encounter stories essentially about people's experiences with deepfakes, some of them real, some of them adapted. So if you want to play along with me here, you can imagine you will read a story that says you have a friend called Doug and you're out with Doug for a few pints one night, and he's telling you about his ex-girlfriend Zoe and how they have drifted apart and he really misses her. And when he gets really drunk, he tells you that sometimes he uses AI technology to create explicit imagery of Zoe, and he says this is fine because, you know, he misses her and, you know, no one's ever going to know about it. He's not threatening to share it online. He's not planning to blackmail her. It's just for his own personal use. And it asks you to reflect, why do you think Doug believes this? And do you think that's true? And then the story goes on and it says, you know, Doug often has a few drinks and tells people the same story, and eventually it gets back to Zoe. And Zoe is really upset and she asks you to explain to Doug why this is a problem. And you then engage in this kind of perspective taking and really put yourself in the shoes of a victim and engage with it. And so across the toolkit, you engage in these kinds of exercises and you really, I suppose, start to understand why these myths are myths. And what we found is that it reduces people's belief in these harmful ideas. And crucially, it reduces their intentions to watch, create or share deepfakes in the future. And we see this immediately after people have completed the toolkit, but also weeks later.
OK, now we have a clip which we'll play now of an excerpt from the toolkit.
Every stranger now represents a potential threat, a reminder of the vulnerability and exposure inflicted upon me.
You shattered the sense of security I used to take for granted. The world feels unfamiliar and dangerous. I'm constantly anxious.
I searched for almost a year to feel safe in my body again. I could no longer receive my partner's touch with openness. I could not feel arousal without feeling shame.
Discovering that Andy was vastly different from the person I thought I knew, and the extent of the harm he intended towards me, is deeply upsetting.
Forming new friendships feels impossible, burdened by the constant question, could this person be like you?
So, Gillian, explain that particular excerpt to us.
Yeah, so these are quotes taken from a video of Australian victims of deepfake abuse. And yeah, like I said, it's building on this idea that for a lot of people, they actually just haven't given much thought to these harms. You know, they maybe think it's not that big a deal, or they don't think what it might be like for the victim. And we know that exposing people to these real harms. You know, lots of the feedback we had from participants, we've had thousands of participants complete this, and lots of them say things like, you know, I hadn't really given this much thought, but pausing here and engaging in this reflection has kind of made me realize why I should not engage with this. And that was really crucial for us, because the risk with educating people and intervening on a topic like this is that ultimately it ends up backfiring. And what you end up doing is drawing people's attention to the technology in a kind of Streisand effect. And I think that is actually what has happened with a lot of the media coverage over the past couple of weeks.
It's funny, we mentioned the Streisand effect a few days ago on the programme. This is where Barbara Streisand was objecting to coverage of where she lived in Malibu. And by drawing attention to the fact that she was objecting to this information being out there, it brought more attention to where she lived in Malibu. It had the reverse effect.
Absolutely. And John started his PhD in 2021. And when we first started working on this, we were moving really slowly and carefully, because that was our main concern. We said lots of people don't know about this technology yet. And what if by teaching people about the harms, we actually just put up a big signpost and direct them to how to use it? So we had to move really carefully with this and be careful of that. And the other kind of risk, I suppose, with intervening in this way is that, in particular, you know, there's a risk with kind of maybe young men in particular that they might feel attacked or targeted, and they feel that they're being blamed for something that they would never engage in. And so it's important that you take a kind of non-paternalistic tone, but at the same time, you want to be very clear on what the harms are.
Now, which particular age group or demographic group is this tool aimed at?
So this is really aimed, this is for everyone. It's designed for adults. It's been validated with adults and university students. But people have completed the toolkit from ages 18 to 89. And we know it's effective kind of across the board. But in the coming months, actually, we are piloting a version for secondary school students. So if anyone is listening, if anyone is a teacher or a principal and is interested in getting involved in this, we have an adapted version with kind of simpler language and scenarios that involve Snapchat and that kind of thing. And we're seeking schools to participate. So our email is deepfakes@ucc.ie, and there's a website for the toolkit, which is called Deepfakes Real Harms.
Now, the question of how people access it, I mean, lots of people listening now will think, yeah, I think I would either want to use this myself or recommend it to someone I know who's having an issue with this kind of material.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to type in Deepfakes Real Harms UCC, you'll find the website. It's free online. You can just kind of click through it and you'll watch videos and engage in these exercises. And we've also made available a kind of very simple PDF version that you can download and print out if you wanted to kind of use it offline as well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in passing that some young men may feel they're being targeted, but probably the stats would suggest that, you know, it's men disrobing women in the main, rarely the other way around. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, misogyny is deeply baked into this technology, and there's lots of examples of that. You know, lots of these apps, even apps that are designed for just general AI kind of use, sometimes you'll find in the back end with the instructions, it provides links to non-consensual synthetic imagery websites, kind of what people call deepfake pornography websites. So it's just all the way down. It's baked into it. So, yeah, you would see the highest rates of perpetration would be in kind of men aged maybe 18 to 40, that kind of age range. But it's crucial that everyone educates themselves on it, because, you know, you do see a lot of us might end up being victims of it, being parents, friends, neighbours of someone. And you see in statements from victims, they'll often say things like, I understand that this is fake imagery, but if my father saw this, I don't think he would ever understand that I didn't do that. And so the more we're all educated on it, you know, the more helpful it is to everyone. But we've been lucky that, you know, John, who has led this work, is an amazing student, and he's a 25-year-old man. And I think that's really useful. He's able to, you know, pick the right language and deliver this in a really appropriate and sensitive way.
Do you have any conclusions, Gillian, in UCC or beyond, about why this is all happening? I mean, are there people who are genuinely evil who are promoting this kind of thing because they want to in some way dismantle society as we know it? Or is it just an example of a technology that's out there that's wrongly used? For example, you know, a designer, an engineer will design a car. That car goes on to kill somebody. That was not the intention of the engineer. The intention was to get someone from A to B. So is it that the technology is, if you like, running wild, or are there people who are deliberately exploiting the technology for really nefarious ends?
I would say both. I would strongly say both. So this research that we're doing was funded by LIRO, which is the Research Ireland Centre for Software. And part of their mission is to encourage responsible software engineering. And when we think about responsibility in software, we actually think of that as a distributed thing. You don't think about blame. You don't think about, you know, legal culpability. You think about collective responsibility. And so, yes, there's a lot on the people who make these technologies. There are, you know, simple enough safeguards that could have been put in place. You see it now. You see how easy it is that they can geo-block these things, and there are actions they can take that they are choosing not to take. Absolutely. But, you know, there's also kind of collective responsibility around this. And the thing we're kind of grappling with is that kind of in the field at the moment is that we see in misinformation research, I do a lot of research on misinformation, and we've learned over the years that actually about 95% of misinformation on the internet comes from about 5% of people. And it's really challenging then to decide and target interventions at those 5% of people, because they're probably responsible for most of it. And we don't have good data on that when it comes to this kind of abuse, but we suspect it's probably similar. You probably have a number of high perpetrating people who are responsible for a lot of this, but not all of it. And like I said, you know, by educating across society, there's a lot that we can do to mitigate the harms.
Dr. Gillian Murphy from the UCC School of Applied Psychology and Research Project Principal Investigator, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.